Isla Borders joins us on Sports Byline. She's a sports pioneer who, despite formidable obstacles, became a little league prodigy, MVP of her otherwise all-male middle school and high school teams, the first woman awarded a baseball scholarship, and the first to pitch and win a complete men's collegiate game. Mike Vec signed Borders to pitch for his St. Paul Saints in the Independent Northern League, where she accomplished what no woman had done since the Negro Leagues era, play men's professional baseball. She played four seasons and became the first woman in the modern era to win a pro game. But off the field, she had some challenges as well, which we'll talk about. And she talks about her life and sports career in her book called Making My Pitch, A Woman's Baseball Odyssey. First of all, Isla, I need to ask you, what made you want to write this book? And how hard was it for you to take a look back and revisit the challenges you had to face in your life?
Well, it took me 20 years. People are like, gosh, why is it taking you 20 years? And I go, oh, I've got a story for that. There were a lot of obstacles that came up in my life, and it took me some time to get it out there, which I'm actually grateful because I had the book ready to go when I was 32. Right now I'm 42, and it was all about baseball. I had tons of notes, tons of journals, journaling with baseball, but something happened, and my partner died by a drunk driver. Got hit by a drunk driver, and it just put me in a tailspin. And it wasn't until right now that I'm 42 that I was able to tell the entire story.
Also, that 10-year difference between when you thought about it and started the project and then you finally did do it, did that give you a different perspective than if you had written it when you were 32?
Definitely, and I'm grateful now. It's hard to get it back out there because I've been out of it for a while, but it's starting to slowly gain momentum now. And yeah, I think it's more rich. I wasn't ready at that time. I probably wouldn't have disclosed everything that I did. This one, I just bared my soul and more. And it just doesn't talk about baseball. It gives a glimpse about that. And, my thought process on the mound, things that I went through that I never told anybody. But then it also gives a little bit of my life and the things that I went through with that, you know, being from a broken home, being homeless, being hungry, hiding that I was a gay athlete, losing my grandmother tragically, losing my wife tragically, and then redemption and getting through that. So there's a lot that is in the book, and I'm hoping by putting it out there, you know, other girls that are playing baseball or even other people that are struggling through things can just be inspired to keep going.
I'm going to assume something, but feel free to correct me on this. I would think the challenges that you had growing up probably steeled you to have to deal with the challenges when you wanted to play baseball.
Yeah, and we've been talking about that a lot because girls right now, they go into softball when they're 13 and then they try to go back into baseball when they're 20. And the lessons that I learned when I was 12 through, 18, going through high school, you know, going through junior high, going through college baseball, I played men's collegiate baseball, all the success, the failures, being scrutinized, different coaches, you know, they treated me like a guy. And when I went and played pro ball, it was a very easy transition because I was used to it, and I went through most of those things.
Revisiting all of this, particularly the early part of your life, Isla, what did you learn about yourself that maybe you didn't know until you started this project?
I would say I'm a very strong and determined person. I have a lot of confidence. And when I got to my breaking point when I was 32, I realized that I couldn't do everything on my own. I could try and try and try and be as strong as I possibly can, but it takes other people too, and it takes reaching out to people. And I am no longer afraid to reach out to try to get more help. And I'm no longer afraid to, I would say, put myself out there on the line and be more open.
When you take a look at your early life, give me some idea, some insight as to what it was like for you.
Early life, I'd say, you know, my dad and my mother, I'm very grateful for. My dad kind of raised me like his son, and I'm extremely grateful for that. But he also did it in a very harsh way, too. And it was, you know, he was an alcoholic and he, you know, was abusive physically and he was very tough on us. And it came with, you know, he wasn't nice to my mother. And seeing that really affected me, even though I was raised by my father. And he taught me tough love. And that was just very difficult growing up as a child. And then on top of that, you know, you have people that are calling you names and, you know, you don't fit in with society. And, you know, people are mean. There's an example I talk about when I'm in high school. People are slashing my tires of my car. So it's tough enough being young and being different and then being a teenager and then having to go through all of that at the same time was a very difficult time for me.
You mentioned about your grandmother. How did she fit into your life?
Oh, she was my everything. I think if you look from when I was born until I was five, I have tons of pictures of us. Everybody kind of still compares me to her. You know, she loved to garden. She loved climbing trees. There's pictures of her throwing the ball, you know, a little wiffle ball to me while I was swinging the bat. We were in the car. We were best buddies. Absolutely best buddies.
Was she a shelter in the storm for you?
I didn't think about that until you just said that. My parents were both kind of working, and she was the one who was kind of raising me when I was young, and she just loved being outside. I was the firstborn, so, you know, we were just going everywhere with each other.
Were you somewhat protective of the other children then in the family?
I pretty much raised them. I taught all of them how to drive when they were 12 or 13. And, pretty much raised them and fed them since my parents were both working.
Isla Borders is with us. We're talking about her book, Making My Pitch, A Woman's Baseball Odyssey. Where did baseball come into your life and how did it come into it?
Well, my dad had me when he was 20. My mother was 18. And he was playing in the minor leagues with the Dodgers. So I pretty much grew up on a baseball field. He was a right-handed pitcher. And it was just a very easy transition. I don't know where that love came, but I always wanted to play professional baseball. And I just was put with the correct parents, and he never pushed me, but he's like, if you want to do this, this is what it's going to take. He knew. And then being female, he knew the struggles that I would have to go through. And like I said, he pushed me really hard as far as being prepared for what I was going to go through. And I'm very grateful for that.
I think most people are, you know, keep hearing me say baseball, 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 and you say baseball as well. Not softball. What was the situation there? Did you not want to play softball or transition then to baseball?
I never had that dream. I just didn't. I always wanted to play Major League Baseball. And there's particular times where people tried to push me into softball, but I wanted to be an overhand pitcher and I wanted to play in the major leagues. So there was never a thought process in my mind that, oh, okay, when I turn 13, I have to go play softball now. It just was never in my mind. It was, what do I have to do to play, you know, to get to the major leagues? And if somebody threw something at me or they tried to stop me from playing baseball, I was very lucky to find a different avenue to keep on playing and win my way on a team.
Isla, you know as well as I do, when you have a family member, particularly a father who played professional sports in the Dodger organization, he has a standard because he was a pro athlete. He knows what it takes. Did he transpose that to any degree on you, put that type of pressure on you or criticize you in a particular way, or was it a supportive way?
It was a supportive way. It was just when people read the book, they're like, oh, my gosh, it sounds like a father and a son type of relationship. You know, he just wanted me prepared. For an example, he brought me out there when I got my car, and he timed me on how to change, you know, how to change a tire within a certain amount of minutes. Because he's like, you know, you might be stranded on the freeway and you might need to change a tire, and I want to know you're okay, you know, or, you know, I want you to change the oil in your car because I want you to be okay. And at the time, I was like, why do I need to learn this stuff, you know? Or, you know, coming home, I get hit in the head with a baseball because this boy didn't want me to play. And I'd come back and I'd be upset, and he'd be like, stop crying. You know, you're not allowed to cry. Tough it out. And this is only a little smidgen of what's going to happen in the future. And, you know, I just didn't get it. And I was like, gosh, why can't you just give me a hug or something? But it prepared me so well for college and then pro ball. And I'm telling you, it did happen. I was stuck on the 5 freeway during rush hour with a flat, and I changed it fast. So I'm very grateful for those things.
It reminds me of the great line, of course, from A League of Their Own. There's no crying in baseball, from Tom Hanks. Isla, hold on just a second. Very insightful, interesting conversation with Isla Borders. I urge you to check out the book. It's called Making My Pitch, A Woman's Baseball Odyssey. We continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline. Isla Borders is with us on Sports Byline USA. Again, I mentioned that she's a sports pioneer and the first to pitch and win a complete men's collegiate game as a woman. When did you get serious about playing baseball at a serious level?
This is going to sound funny, but when I was 12, you know, Rick Lozano came out. He's the head sports guy in L.A. when I was 12 years old to film. And being 12 years old in Little League, I was the only girl playing Little League, and I struck out 18 out of 18 batters, and it was on the news, it was in the paper, and that was my first taste of being scrutinized, you know, on TV and in the paper. And then that just kind of followed me throughout high school. You know, I was always in the paper with how I was doing. College, it got, I don't want to say out of control, but a little bit. And it just progressed from there.
What was the reaction to you on boys' teams or men's team as you progressed in the game? When you first came on the field, and this wasn't a boy, this was a woman, a young girl, what were their reactions to you?
It was the same thing every time. My first year, you know, it was, they would throw everything they possibly could at me. They would say everything that they possibly could. They would try to get me to quit the game or not even be able to play. And then as soon as they saw that I was out there because they saw that I was having fun, that I loved the game, I wasn't out there to prove, you know, women are superior to men, or I wasn't out there for a feminist agenda. I was just out there because I really loved playing, and I wanted to be a part of the team, and I wanted to win, and I could help them win. As soon as you get that out there to guys, because at first you're like, who is this girl coming out here? But then if you show, hey, I've got talent and I can win and help you win, too, I'm out here because I love the game and I could be a teammate and a friend, they're fine with it. But it usually takes 1 year, and that's what it did in Little League, and then that's what happened in junior high and then high school. College, it took 2 years. And then in pro ball, gosh, it took maybe 6 months. And there's some really, really difficult times, and some opposing team members were not too happy. But my teammates, the people that were behind me and working with me, they were fine with it as soon as they got to know me.
You know, I'm going to make an observation again. I would suppose, knowing the life of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in baseball, that it probably was a little bit like that. But that was a sex barrier for you, was it not?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I don't even want to compare myself to Jackie Robinson because of, you know, what he did. But at that time, I was looking for anything and everybody to say, how do I deal with this? You know, I just got a death threat. Somebody said they're going to kill me if I go out there and pitch. You know, I've got people following me home. I've got people hiding in my hotel room. I can't say anything because I have to keep it all inside because I don't want it to get out there. And then people say, hey, this is what happens when you know, let a girl play on a team. And it, just trying to deal with all of that and then still pitch. And so I would read a lot of Jackie Robinson's books that were written about him to see how he handled it, how he went about certain things.
Yeah, and I would assume it was similar because I know in talking to Pee Wee Reese one time, he told me about what he had to deal with, meaning Jackie had to deal with, from other people in sports, other players, as well as some of his own teammates. And I assume that was the same way with you. Did you have anybody to turn to who really you could count on in those difficult moments?
I did. I had one guy named David Glick, and I mentioned him in the book. He was my best friend, and I was his best friend. We kind of looked out for each other. He was kind of an outcast, too. during my time when I was playing, not a lot of people had tattoos. And he had tons of tattoos. And he would actually wear a T-shirt, and he wouldn't want to take a shower because he didn't want people to see his tattoos. He was released at one point from baseball because of his tattoos. And so we kind of just were two outcasts. And he was looking out for me, and he gave me a lot of great suggestions as far as how to be a part of the team. You know, what are the guys looking for? Kind of like an inside scoop of what they were thinking in the clubhouse and what I can do to help. And then with him, you know, I would play catch with him all the time. We loved to play, you know, catch every day and work out. He lived close to me. He was in Visalia. I lived in L.A. We'd work out with each other. So we were very close. We both were rooting for each other.
Yeah, your sexuality, you talk about it in the book, about the struggle that you had there, having to deal with that. How did you deal with it in the early years, and how did that change in dealing with it as you got older?
Oh, my, it's everything, unfortunately. Keeping everything inside and hiding. I mean, ultimately, three reasons, and that being one of them, is why I quit baseball. And it was, one, I was hungry and, you know, didn't have a lot of money. And two was I was hiding, and it just gets so tiring. It's so tiring just hiding everything, because I'm a people person. I love people. And, you know, my teammates, I love them. I had a great time with them. They would ask me to go out and do things, and I didn't go. I was hiding from the media. And they're just like, gosh, why do you have so many balls up? And it was just because I was so afraid of being exposed, because I knew if I was, I would lose my chance of playing ball. And I've been told that, you know, if you would have said, you know, that you were a gay athlete, yeah, you would not have played college and you would not have played pro ball. So it just took a toll on me. And finally, when I retired, I got out of the limelight. I healed. I went and got some help. And now, being completely open, honest, it's just so freeing, and you're just not tired anymore. And you're able to be who you are and just talk to people.
You know, I've got a couple of friends that are gay, and they're gay athletes. Billy Beane, of course, who is the ambassador in Major League Baseball, dealing with those type of issues. And he and I have had long talks, because he had to deal with an awful lot of the same situations. Did you ever get angry that you were kind of pushed out of the game before maybe you wanted to walk away on your own?
It's my fault. It is completely my fault. I take responsibility for that. And it was because I just wasn't in a good place because of that. It just, you know, you're making, starting out at $750 a month, living on people's couches. You have to come back and find a job for 6 months, and you're still working out. And some things that happened with my family, where I thought I was going to have money and it was taken away. And then the idea of not being able to date, not being able to be who I was, do anything, hiding all the time. I was just done. I just wanted to be away from the media. And that's my own fault. I just wish I was in a better spot. I had better advice. And I think I would have been in a different place, but I'm very grateful for those 4 years that I had. And maybe, you know, maybe I can get back into baseball and give back to people in a different way.
Along the way, at every level that you competed at, how did they deal with the accommodations for a female, a girl, or a woman playing baseball?
I didn't want them to accommodate me. I just wanted it to where I didn't want to impose on them. I kind of felt, you know, I didn't want to go into the clubhouse. I didn't want to take a shower. I just wanted to be playing baseball and not impose anything on my players or management. And they actually were like, hey, we'll go. Everybody can take a shower. We'll go sit in the bus and we'll wait for you. You could go take a shower and come on the bus. And I was just like, nope, I'm okay. I can go on the bus. We'll go back to the hotel and I'll take a shower. And that was just me trying to make stuff as seamless as possible so that they could see that, hey, signing a woman, hey, it's not that bad. She's not going to impose on us and try to change the game or change our way of life.
We got about 90 seconds before we have to break. But the college experience, you went to a Christian university. I would have supposed that that was the most difficult thing in your early life when it came to baseball. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yes, Yes.
Tell me a little bit more about it.
Well, the reason why I went there is Charlie Phillips was the head coach. He's a left-handed pitcher. He played with at USC and with Ron Dado. And I thought I could learn so much from him. He had tons of people that were signed out of SCC, now Vanguard University. And I thought, what a better place to go. I can learn from a left-handed pitcher. I could get seen, probably sign, you know, hopefully a contract. And going to a Christian school, I was raised Baptist. My dad was Baptist. My mom was Catholic. And still hiding who I was and going to that school and playing baseball was extremely difficult. It took its toll on me. My first year I did great, but I had to go through, that was probably the toughest time of my life, a lot of bad things, a lot of negative things. But changing over to my senior season to Whittier College, I had a different experience.
We've got Isla Borders with us. We're going to continue talking about her career and her life and also this wonderful book that we're making a selection of the month on the Sports Byline Book Corner. It's called Making My Pitch, A Woman's Baseball Odyssey. And when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about Mike Beck, a good friend of mine, and we're going to talk about how he brought her to professional baseball and how she became the first woman to pitch and win a complete men's collegiate game and also do the same thing in pro baseball. So we'll continue on as we move across the country and around the world. Isla Borders with us and you on Sports Byline. Isla Borders is with us here on Sports Byline USA. I mentioned before the break about Mike Beck. He was important in your getting the opportunity to play professional baseball. Did he call you to offer you this opportunity? And I'm wondering what your reaction was to it.
No, I actually reached out to him. What happened is when I was in my last season at Whittier College, I was reaching out to some professional teams and saying, if I can just get somebody to look at me, you know, can a scout come and just take a look at me? And he responded back. He's like, hey, I'm going to send one of my scouts to look at you and we'll go from there. And that's what I always wanted to do. I wanted to earn my way on a team. So Barry Moss, he came out. He has a long, extensive career in Major League Baseball, and then he's with the Dodgers right now organization. He scouted me. He gave him a report, you know, lefty pitcher, crafty lefty, thinks that, you know, I could make it there. I've got a good screwball, curveball. My fastball is a little bit slower than normal, but he thinks I could get people out and wants to invite me to spring training camp. So that's a report he gave to Mike Beck, and Mike's like, yeah, you're going to come here and you're going to earn a spot. He goes, I'm not paying you. If you make the team, then we'll reimburse you for the 2 weeks. But you're pretty much coming out here on your own. You have to earn a spot on the team. And then if you do that. So it was not you have a spot and you're going to play on this team. But when I got there and I flew in, he greeted me in the parking lot. And immediately I knew, oh my gosh, this is an amazing guy that I'm meeting right now. He was for me. He would do anything for me, but I had to earn my spot. And I was just extremely grateful how everything happened, but I continue to be extremely grateful for Mike on how he handled the media, how he handled me, the team. And then just the support that I got from him.
Yeah, I agree with you. In my conversations with him over the years, and of course his dad being the great Bill Veeck, master showman, and Mike and I still laugh about Disco Night at Chicago. He said, worst thing I ever did in my career. What did you find the competition to be like at the pro level?
Oh, my gosh. You know, that's the thing. Usually if you sign, you go into some. You go to rookie ball, then you go to low A ball, then you go to high A ball, double A, triple A, major leagues. This was like straight to high A, double A. That's what they were kind of saying how independent Northern League was. So it was a huge step going from like an NAIA school, which is equivalent to Division II, to high A ball, possibly double A. And my whole thing the first year was survival. And, you know, I had a higher ERA, but I try to tell people, don't compare me to the ERA in Major League Baseball. Compare me to all the other rookies. I mean, there were close to 25 rookies that were let go with the Dukes in one season. So that's compare me to that. Compare me to the first year rookie. And then same with my second year. Compare me, you know, to that. And then my third year, I had a great year. So I was pleased with how things happened.
There are two significant dates in your pro career. One is May 31st, 1997. Tell everybody about that first game you pitched.
Oh, my goodness. If I had to sum up my life, this would be it right here. I got the first opportunity, and I threw a pitch, got a ground ball, and I was out of the inning. We were running to all the post fans were running to the dugout, and we stopped, and the umpire called the balk. And I'm like, oh, my God, everybody was ticked off because you're running to the dugout. So then after that, it was just, it was a hit after hit after hit. I got lit up. And I came out of the game. That was my first professional game. I hit somebody, too, and it was just horrible. And when I came back in, Barry Moss said, you're going to be out there tomorrow. We are not letting you stick with this. So he goes, immediately, we're going to put you out there tomorrow. He goes, be ready. I said, okay. And then he puts me out there the following game, and then I struck out the side. And unfortunately, that's how my life has been. I've kind of messed up a little bit at the beginning, but then I always usually come back.
I'm thinking about that first appearance, and I'm just wondering, did they send the manager out or the pitching coach out to try to calm you down? And what was that discussion like if they did?
I just remember Barry in the bullpen saying that the umpire likes to call a lot of balks. He goes, be careful. I said, all right. And I went out there, and I got the ground ball. I did not think that I balked. He called it. And then obviously that upset me. And I don't remember somebody going out there. I think it's just I got hit and Marty came out there and pulled me out of the game. But Barry's the one that came out and scouted me. He's the one that really believed in me and knew me. And he knew how much that was going to hurt. And the best thing to do is to get a pitcher right back out there.
And after you started your pro career, did you have that particular aha moment? Do you remember that moment saying, hey, I can pitch at this level of competition?
I would say that's when I went at the one that I wrote in the book. I'm really proud about going 12 innings of scoreless ball in the Northern League against top-notch teams like the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, you know, where their batting average and their ERA was just unreal. Went against their top pitcher, the top team, and threw six scoreless innings. I didn't win that game, but that game meant so much to me. Being on the road, you know, against a first-place team, and 60 Minutes was there filming me, all that pressure. I still, you know, did really well, and I was competing. And I finally felt like I made it at that point.
What are some of the carryover experiences that you have that have been able to help you after baseball?
I would say I'm really good with relationships. Now I work as a firefighter paramedic. I also do baseball coaching. Ever since I retired, I go all around the world and I teach kids baseball. And nobody really knew that because the media hasn't been around. But I've always coached boys, though. I've coached little leaguers. I've coached collegiate athletes. I've even helped coach pro athletes baseball. You know, I didn't have a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, so my mechanics had to be really, really good. So I can break those down and help people. But I would say it's relationships now and getting along with people. Being in the fire department, you're there with each other for 24 hours. And you have to have a good attitude. You have to pull your weight. You have to be strong. And you have to get along with people.
Do you have a feeling now that you're more accepted, whether with the fire department or in anything you do now? How much has times changed in the acceptance of gays that have made it easier for you and other people that might want to come out? Jennifer Azey is a good friend of mine. You may know her, of course. Outstanding basketball player in the Hall of Fame. And I know that she finally came out here about a year ago, and we were talking, and she said it was the best thing I did. And she said something like you said. She said, you know, when I did come out, I just felt a big weight off of me.
Yeah, it's hard to explain to somebody that's not. You just feel you're depressed, and you feel bad about yourself because you're hiding who you are. And you're just lying all the time to your family and your friends as far as where you're at, what you're doing, everything. And when you finally stop that, you feel better because you're not lying to somebody. It's just like keeping that with you. And, you know, who I'm married to right now, my wife, she was a track and field just standout at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And she had a very similar experience. You know, she ran with Susie Hamilton.
Right.
She's like the top three all time at University of Madison, Wisconsin in the 800. I'm so proud of her. But she, same thing, had a problem and got out of that because she was hiding being gay and it took a toll on her. So now, you know, both of us were able to be married to each other, which we do not take for granted whatsoever. And to be able to who we are is so liberating, and it just makes you to be more free and talk to people and just have better relationships because you can be open and honest.
Does your wife kind of shake her head when she either shares stories or thinks back about Susie? Because when I had Susie here on the show, and for those people that don't know the story there, Susie, an outstanding athlete, a world-class mm-hmm. athlete, but yet she had another side to her because of medications.
Yep.
And she went off to Las Vegas and became a very high-class call girl. And she and
yes.
I talked very candidly and honestly about it. And when somebody hears that, something that's totally out of context with somebody that you know, how do you two, or how has she reconciled that in a sense?
I don't, yeah. So my wife, her name's Jenny Westfall, and she was training with Susie Hamilton, and she was the big into the 800, and they have a very, I don't want to say a close relationship, but they still talk to each other. She's even reached out to Susie for advice. Her husband, I guess, is a lawyer trying to help me with book thingies. But I can't say that I've talked to her or know her that well. But that just goes to show you that, gosh, when you're living a lie, and no matter what it is, how it just takes a toll on you, your family, and affects everything. So as far as time now, I'm so grateful that things have opened. You know, my family knows about it, and I'm invited to all the holidays. My friends at work, you know, they invite me and my wife over for parties or banquets. And it's just an amazing experience to have that now.
Isla, I know that athletes at a high level are very disciplined. They're very focused. And I'm just wondering, after the tragedy of losing your first wife, whether that discipline was something that helped you get through it.
I guess so. It was my faith, though, and that's the hardest thing that people don't understand, I guess, is I'm still a Christian lady, even though I'm gay, and I've always been able to get through everything, and I reached a point, that's another thing I'm trying to talk to people, is I was in such a major depression, I don't remember 6 years of my life. People have told me that they've had conversations with me or that I went somewhere, and I don't remember it. So my first wife was killed by a drunk driver, and that was when I was 32, about ready to put the book out there. That's why I put everything on hold. And I just sunk in such a big depression and that it all ultimately almost came to suicide. I was within 2 seconds of doing that. But I finally said, God, you've got to help me. I can't do this on my own. I think I'm really strong, but I can't make this on my own. And then as soon as that point happened, from that time on, it was a recovery and how to do that. And yes, by playing baseball and going through failures, it didn't compare to that, but by going through failures, being upset, coming back through it, and working through that process in a healthy way, I think greatly prepared me for going through that.
We only have 2 minutes left, but as you look down the road, is there a chance at some point you think that a female could be on a roster of a Major League Baseball team?
Oh, definitely. But they're going to come from Japan, Canada, or Australia.
Now, why do you say that?
You know what? We just had a conference about this, and that is Japan has a straight path for women to play baseball. When they're 13, they don't go play softball, and they're not forced into softball. If they want to still play baseball, they can. Same with Canada. Same with Australia. They have women's baseball teams. They have women's high school teams. And they have women's professional teams. The United States, nothing. So I'm hoping I could be a part of that and try to change it. I've always been invited to go teach the Japanese women and men baseball. I've never been invited out in the United States. This will be my first year. And that's in April. I'm going to the Trailblazers series in Compton, California, that's sponsored by Major League Baseball and USA Baseball. And it's the first event that I'll be a part of out here teaching women baseball.
When you look back on your life and you think about all you've gone through, all that you accomplished as well, what is that one moment, that one thing that is etched in your mind, Isla?
I would say being a part of the Northern League championship team. You know, when I first got my baseball card, I thought that was it. That was just the coolest thing. It meant the world to me. But to be able, in my first year of professional baseball, I still have it in front of me, that ring. And it was just a bunch of crazy guys and myself, bunch of misfits that all came together, and we worked really hard from that. Nobody believed in us. And to win the Northern League championship means the world to me.
In about 30 seconds, what do you want people to take away from this book?
It's a book that's about baseball. It's a book about my life. It's a book about persevering and falling forward. I think it has a little bit for everybody.
Isla, I want to thank you for sharing the story. It's a very inspirational one. It's one of toughness, one of somebody very focused, one of somebody that had a passion for a sport and lived it. And I think the message is a very strong message. We're going to make it a selection of the month, as I said, on the Book Corner. You're welcome here anytime on Sports Byline. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Isla Borders with us. She's a sports pioneer who, despite formidable obstacles, became a Little League prodigy, MVP of her otherwise all-male middle school and high school teams, and the first woman awarded a baseball scholarship and the first to pitch and win a complete men's collegiate game and also in the pro ranks as well. We've got you on Sports Byline.